The Breakfast Club.
I know you're excited.
Why is that?
Well, because of the new Melbourne zip line.
It's happening, is it? Because the strawberry pickers had decided that they weren't happy about it.
Who?
The strawberry people.
What strawberry people?
No, seriously, is this the one that is down in the Mornington Peninsula?
No, this is over the Yarra River. This is us in the city, just down the road, Whitey.
Right, so no more big wheel, but we're going to have a zip line instead.
I think, from the artist's impressions, as displayed in the press this morning, it's pretty much where the Big M inflatable marker is for the Member Masters ski jump, or the Pure Milk Carton.
Yeah, that wasn't a blown up balloon type thing. That was like a judge's box. It's still there.
No, the Pure Milk thing.
Yeah, they put the over the top of it. It was like a casing that they put over that old concrete type of judges thing.
Well, it looks to me like that's sort of where it is. Where they, if you leave it late, if you go past there, it's tough to get it back to the front of the ramp.
That's right. They've got to cut late.
Yeah, it's a real late cut for the Member Master ski jump.
Yeah.
So it looks as though that's where it's going to be. 130-metre zip line over the Yarra with people zooming from Fed Square to Alexandra Gardens. Instead of having to find a park, you just zip across.
Do you zip back? Is it like $50 one way and then $70 to get back?
I don't know. There you go. Here we go. Firefly is what it's called. It will operate two cables, allowing for couples or parents and children to zoom 9 metres above the river at the same time. It doesn't say if you go back, but there's two cables at least. I don't know.
You see, the world opens up in a couple of weeks and this is what we can do. It's very exciting.
I wouldn't think you're going back. Because the zip line requires a little gravitational descent, doesn't it? Isn't that the whole idea of the zip line? There must be a little gradient so you can actually fall.
I'm not sure. No, that's a good point. That's a good point. I don't know.
I'm not sure you can push back up the hill.
Well, the problem is you can zip across, and then you've got to do like a really long walk back to the car to get back to the other side. You'd have to go to a bridge.
But I think if you're going into the city to zip line, you're prepared to find yourself walking around the city, go from the gardens.
There was one that was being proposed down on the Mornington Peninsula, you know, where they grow strawberries.
Yeah.
I don't think they were too happy about that. Have you ever been to the Enchanted Garden?
I have.
How good is that place?
It's solid.
No, it's better than solid.
Nah, it's solid.
For kids?
Yeah, but I'm not a kid anymore.
I know that, but like the tree surfing thing.
Yeah, and the tree surfing's
very good.
Good.
That's excellent. I clearly wouldn't be doing that myself. Might break down a tree or two, but for the kids, that's standing stuff.
No, the kids do enjoy the Enchanted Garden and the whole tree ziplining thing, whatever they do down there. No, that's a good facility for entertainment for a day out with the children who are restless after being locked up for 2 years. Perhaps they might get a bit of work, I reckon, down there. But I'm okay with it. I think this is a good idea. Where else would you like to have a zip line? Someone says off the SMS, because it's an interesting point, like a zip line from the G to the Docklands. Damien Hardwick would like that.
Yeah, that's right.
The whole Richmond team would like to be able to jump on a cable car situation from the G to the Docklands and get there without too much stress. That'll get some traction.
You think?
Yep, I reckon it will. Particularly, as you say, coming out of lockdown and opening up, people will just be wanting to do anything. Just get me out of the house. Let me do something. And if that means there's a zip line going across the Yarra River, 130 metres, 9 metres above, and going at 40 k's an hour, the kids would love that.
Yeah. I don't want to put a dampener on things. Oh, firstly, I'm not overly excited by the zip line. I was going through the news services and bits and pieces this morning, and they were talking, obviously everyone's getting a bit excited about the fact that in a couple of days you can have people in your home and you can, things start to get to normal. And the first sort of news report was a reminder from the Australian Medical Association that vaccinations are wearing thin. They're losing their
efficacy.
Effectiveness. Efficacy. Wee-wee. And as a result of that, just be careful having people in your homes and maybe have second thoughts about whether you want to do it. Fantastic. How good's that? We're talking about putting a dampener on an exciting time. That was it there. Like a wet blanket on a fire.
Oh, well, a wet blanket on a fire is better than just a wet blanket on no fire. Nobody wants a wet blanket, unless, of course, there is a fire. I'm all for the zip line. I'd like to get some feedback early doors off the SMS. Yay or nay for the zip line? 0416 90 50 52. I think it's a winner. And there is some other feedback going around as well. There's some research going on to why fast food is such a craved delicacy, if you wanted to phrase it like that. Did you know that? The Monash University, Turner Institute for Brain and Mental Health, says so they hope the research would help people choose healthier foods. We want to create a better understanding about why people, particularly those with obesity, make decisions about food that fuel unhealthy eating habits. 2 in 3 Australians are overweight or obese, and overconsumption of energy-dense foods such as pies or burgers and sugary drinks is the main contributor to the obesity epidemic. Evidence so far seems to point to energy density of the food being an important hook for our reward systems. And our own research is showing that people with obesity tend to have an increased reactivity of the reward system when they are considering food choices. Reward. A lot of people out there looking for just quick fix. I think it's quick fix, isn't it? Is it quick fix? If we were doing our own research, and we've got a lot of KFC fans out there, as we well know, in the audience. 0416 90 50 52. Is it just quick fix? Are we just too lazy?
Well, you're asking the wrong person. I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, no, you're a man of great dietary requirements. But are we just looking at quick fixes? Is that us?
It tastes good, Daniel. So that's
you're
a starting
on the energy
point.
Density situation.
And then the second part of it is that it's easy, isn't it?
What's what I said?
Yeah, a quick fix. Yeah.
Quick fix.
I think that's a stupid report. Well, it is. It's obvious.
Well, no, it's not. Clearly.
People enjoy the food, and it's easy to get.
But we want to create a better understanding of why, so we can make better choices.
Well, I've just given them the... They've got to spend time and energy and money on more important things.
2 in 3 Australians are overweight. It's an epidemic. It costs a fortune, this stuff.
What's that? The reports?
No, not the reports. They're dealing with that level of... obesity and that sort of stuff. And we're all there. There's plenty of people listening there, myself included, be sitting there going, well, I need to make better choices.
I always need to make better choices. All sorts of things.
In all sorts of things. Did you see, there's the whole vaccination thing, talking about the efficacy perhaps diminishing, according to one of your reports that you read, which I don't want to read, because it sounds like a real jam out of the donut situation.
Yeah, no doubt.
Speaking of bad choices, the Washington State football coach had decided that he wouldn't like to be vaccinated, and the Washington State Athletic Commission or Athletic Committee have decided that that's a bad outcome for us, and he's been sacked from his job. $3.2 million.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
$3.2 million he's been sacked from, 42-year-old. He said he wouldn't take it, citing reasons which will remain private. He was reported to have sought an exemption from Washington's vaccine mandate on religious grounds, but was unsuccessful. $3.2 million.
I know, but, I mean, people are making these sorts of decisions. I mean, look, it's each their own, I guess. But, you know, as you said, it's not just careers that people are putting on the line, but it's also a hell of a lot of money to make a philosophical stance. You just wonder whether it will happen at some point in Australian sport. I think it will. I think it will. I think someone... I mean, we've sort of seen it a little bit with the AFLW player. But I think there will be some problems. Because there has to be.
Mm.
Because there are so many people that are professional athletes that... You know, it's in a way it's reflective of society or it's a part of society, but it's a lot of money. It's a lot of money to give up.
When you consider that's probably, you know, it's a 5-year deal. 5 at 3.2, there's $16 million that's not coming in.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a whole lot of cars to wash.
Yes.
That's a whole lot of cars to wash. Interesting times to be alive. We're going to cross to the States to preview the NBA season too shortly, which is going to be good fun. I'm looking forward to that.
So have you heard this latest story with Ben Simmons?
I have come across that.
Yeah. So Ben Simmons has been fined for... So he's turned up.
Yep.
But he's been fined for essentially a number of different things, missing preseason matches before he turned up.
Yep.
But the latest one now is that in practice, he's refused to go onto the court at certain times. And also, he's been training with his phone in his pocket. Which is a little... Now, clearly, I mean, people will say that's unprofessional. He was trying to count his extra steps, obviously, with his phone in his pocket. But, so I'm not so much of an issue with that. But this is a guy that has just completely lost the plot. And it's disappointing because, apart from the fact he's a good player, you know, he's representing Australia in a way. And, you know, that's... It's just so disappointing that someone would behave like he is. Regardless of why he feels aggrieved or upset or whatever, this is playing out so badly for him off the back of the Olympics, missing them.
Yeah, it's not a positive story for Ben's PR team. I mean, they'd be sitting there going, what the hell do we do here? According to reports yesterday, Doc Rivers, the coach of the 76ers, asked Ben Simmons to join a defensive drill. Simmons refused, which is in itself. If the coach is asking you to do something at training, you just do it. Because it's not exactly out of the realms of your job. Rivers asked again. Simmons said no. Again. Rivers then told Simmons he should go home. Simmons dropped the ball and left. And he's been suspended for the opening season game, or season opening game. So he certainly won't be playing for that. And then Rivers went on to say, according to ESPN, I thought he was a distraction today. I didn't think he wanted to do what everyone else was doing. I'm going to give Ben every chance to be part of the team as I coach. As a coach, I have to protect the team first. But then Joel Embiid, the big star center, who has been such a powerful ally through his time in Philly and a great part of the combination, Simmons and Embiid, fair to say things escalated between him and Ben yesterday when he said, at this point, I don't care about that man. That's a fair clip for one of your teammates publicly.
Absolutely. I've heard those comments. They're pretty dismissive.
He does whatever he wants. That's not my job. That's the front office's job. I'm only focused on trying to make the team better, win some games, play hard every night, try to lead the guys we have here, and I'm sure they feel the same way. I don't care about that man.
Yeah, so I think that, I mean, obviously he's got an issue with the team he's at the moment. He just has to be really careful that other teams now go, well, we don't want to be involved in this sort of, you know, activity. It has to be tarnishing his reputation off the back of, you know, again, refusing to represent Australia at the Olympics to then go and do this. He's not really coming across as a team player, is he?
No.
Now, maybe he's just trying to make a stand to get out and that there will be other teams that will ignore this sort of behaviour. But, he's treading a very fine line.
There'd be a lot of buyer beware, though, if you are looking at him from an outside organisation perspective, trying to get him in or thinking about getting him in. You'd be watching this with interest, I agree.
No doubt about that. And, you know, like, the thing that upsets me the most about it is that when he burst onto the scene, so many people were proud of him. You know, proud that here is an Australian that is you know, potentially the biggest name Australian basketballer in the world from an Australian perspective, you know, doing it on the big stage, doing so well, for now to where it's become, it's a dramatic fall from grace.
But I think that's more on how we feel, isn't it, as opposed to what he owes us or what we expect of him. Like, isn't that more about just our perception of Ben Simmons? It's not it shouldn't be a burden that he carries. I mean, he's entitled to behave the way he wants to behave. Now, he certainly is doing a different job as he did when he burst onto the scene, as you say. But he doesn't owe us anything from an Australian sports fan's perspective.
No, he doesn't. But again, I get emotional just talking about it.
I can hear it in your voice.
but this is a guy that, you know, we were so proud of, you know, coming from the Eastern Suburbs of Melbourne. His dad played in the NBL. You know, he burst onto the world scene. You know, he captured the imagination of so many sports fans. But he's falling into the Nick Kyrgios category where you sort of almost got to watch with your eyes closed half the time with how he's behaving. There's no questioning his ability. But I think Ben is a little bit like Nick. He kind of doesn't seem to care that there are people back in Australia that really want to barrack for him. And that you could tend to lose that enthusiasm for him, for his behaviour, not necessarily his ability on the court, but just the whole package.
No, I agree with that, absolutely. But that doesn't affect the way he plays. That's not going to affect his career in the NBA, how we feel about him, the ebbs and flows of our emotion towards him. It's the same as Kyrgios. You're right. It's the same as Kyrgios. It doesn't affect the way they play. They are what they are as athletes, and they perform at their own to their own expectations and own driving factors, I suppose.
But it affects how we support them.
Yeah, but if we're here and they're over there, does it really matter?
Well, I don't think he cares, but I'm not sure. But I think, you know, again, as sports fans, and basketball's not my favourite sport, but as sports fans, when you see or you hear Ben Simmons do well, there's an element of pride that comes out. He's an Australian guy, grew up in Melbourne. Great story. You want him to do well, but it's got to the point now where I couldn't care less what he does.
Let's get to some hoops. We want to talk some hoops here because it is the start of the NBA season and the Milwaukee Bucks are the reigning champs, and I reckon they'd be very, very excited in Milwaukee for what this season might be as well. Dario Melendez is the Bucks beat reporter with Bally Sports. He joins us on the Breakfast Club. Hello, Dario.
Hey, guys. Thanks so much. First off, I got to apologize to Joey because you guys know our U.S. educational system aren't very good over here, and I was texting him at, 10 at night your time because I can't read when he wants us on, and I don't know time zones. So, my bad, Joey.
He's just gone through my ears, and he said, it was 11, Dario. So it's even worse. But we are happy.
My bad, Steve.
But I can tell you this much. Having worked with Joey for a little while now, he would have been fast asleep, so you didn't interrupt him at all. Don't worry about that. Now tell us, how we're on the eve of the NBA season. The Bucks are the reigning champions. What's the mood like in the city? Because it was pretty significant when they won last season the title. What's the build-up like to this one from the Bucks' perspective?
Everybody's very excited. They're about to throw another party in Deer District. I think I talked to you last time, and everybody was partying down on Water Street and jumping in the river. I don't know if we're going to see that. But they're going to have another block party right outside of Pfizer Forum in the Deer District. The players are getting the rings tonight. Giannis said his only stipulation was that his ring was bigger than his brother's ring. but it's really cool. It's a really cool vibe, especially with the baseball team. The Brewers going out early. Everybody expected the Brewers to kind of be in that championship parade competition with the Bucks. But now that you have basketball starting back up and the ring ceremony tonight, so it's going to be a good 24 hours here.
And you wouldn't mind thinking that, you know, when you have a ring ceremony at home for the first championship forever, basically, and you've got the Brooklyn Nets, you haven't got an easy one starting. It's the Nets are coming to town.
Yeah, and look, the only silver lining here is that it's not 2012, because this Nets team would have been really good if this was 2012. Instead, you have the geriatric Nets coming to town. And, I mean, again, look, they got Blake Griffin. That's awesome. Aldridge is going to be good. No Kyrie because of his non-vaccine COVID situation. But James Harden and Kevin Durant are always going to present a challenge. And the Bucks aren't going to be without Bobby Portis and Rodney Hood and Dante DiVincenzo because of some alien injuries. But, yeah, I mean, look, Kevin Durant by himself is always going to give you a little bit of a challenge. But even if they lose, they win. Because guess what? Today's game doesn't matter. The only thing that matters tonight is celebrating that ring ceremony.
Yes, very good, very good. Can I ask you, Dario, about the Kyrie Irving situation, just in his particular stance, and what the American sports-loving public think of that?
It's weird. And again, I'm guessing you guys pay attention over here. It's become so politicized.
Yeah.
No one really knows what to believe. Do you believe the science, which you probably should? Do you believe the politicians? Because, again, they tell us to put our masks on. They tell us to take our masks off. They tell them to put them on and put it off. It's like a bingo game with whatever we're supposed to do every day. And I guess the initial response from the NBA was that you weren't going to have to be tested. You weren't going to have to be vaccinated. And Kyrie said that that's the way he planned for the season. And he's already a weird dude anyway. He's kind of a flat earther, which is all you really need to know about Kyrie Irving. But he's sticking to his guns, man. He's going to go down with the ship. He says he doesn't have enough research on the vaccine, and because of that, the Nets aren't going to let him play. So that's kind of where it is.
Nothing better than a Wednesday morning to be able to see Sherelle McMahon when she joins us as part of the team here on the Breakfast Club, and she's back again. Sherelle, good morning.
Good morning to you both. How are you going?
We're going very, very well, thank you. We're both going very well, aren't we, Adam?
Great. I'm going okay. I'm I like the top you're wearing.
Well, I was going to say, we're going better now because of the shirt that you're wearing.
We wouldn't mind some of those sort of shirts. A hoodie. Something.
You're wearing the old VCA.
Fishing for some gear. Yes, I'm actually going into the office today. So on previous days that I've been on with you, I haven't been. So I've got the official Victorian Cricket Association shirt on.
How good does the logo look? The old VCA logo. Looks awesome.
It's much better than the Cricket Victoria logo. We need more VCA action. Why can't we go back to the
Victorian... Well, I think they have, because it's no longer the Bushrangers, so it's the Victorian cricket team. So it's...
No, but it's still Cricket Victoria is the governing body, aren't they? Are you Cricket Victoria, Cheryl?
Yeah.
Cricket Victoria, yes.
But they've gone back to that logo. That's what they wear on the caps and,
no,
and the shirts.
No, I understand that, but it doesn't actually stand for anything.
No, it's a good point.
Because it doesn't exist anymore,
yeah,
that organisation. So why can't we go back to the Victorian Cricket Association?
I don't know.
Because you're right.
People don't use those kind of terms anymore.
Association.
It's all nice and share. It's not an association. I don't know. They've moved away from the association, haven't they? It's all sports.
Mm. Yeah, but it creates great logos.
The A helps, you think.
Now, Sherelle, it's quite topical that you're wearing that Victorian polo today.
Mm.
Because there was a photo yesterday of Daniel wearing his club apparel.
Yes,
with Michael Voss.
I saw this.
Now, there's a couple of things to unpack. Firstly, the fact that he clearly had done some manscaping yesterday morning coming into work for the photo and denied that had taken place. He lied to the audience before the photo. And secondly, he looked rather unnatural in his pose, that he was almost wearing some sort of garment underneath the shirt to enhance his body. And he was also, the third part to this was that he was closer to the camera than Michael Voss. And I'm not sure whether that was just to make sure that he was the number one man in town, or just to look bigger compared to Michael Voss, who was more in the background.
I think it's to try and start asserting his dominance.
It seemed to be that case.
He's the main coach in town.
And his arms were quite big.
Look on your face. I don't know. Has there been some special manscaping? Is that what I mean? I don't know how much detail you're seeing. I mean, I can see the bumps, which I mean, it looks reasonably cleanly shaven. What's going on, Half? Did you do some special work to get yourself looking good?
Well, firstly, I'll take it as a compliment. I'll take all of this as a compliment because none of it's actually true.
None of it?
No. Sunday, I did a weekly shave on Sunday. Do my weekly shave on Sunday morning to polish the bonds. And just trim the beard. It's an important thing to do. It's part of my routine. Get set for the working week. So there was no deliberate ploy to try and intimidate the cameraman with my beauty. But if that's how you've seen it in my physical prowess, if that's how you've seen it, then I take it as a compliment. Clearly, chiseling is paying off. And
are you doing some, are you?
Well, I'm a leader of people, leader of athletes. They need to be seen... To see the man in the gym just throwing the tin around. That's what I do. That wasn't on the agenda yesterday. That wasn't on the agenda. There was no mention of a photograph that was going to be widely distributed amongst the socials where you people can take the mickey out of me. It wasn't the feedback. It was an unusual pose. You're right. The arms behind the back. The arms behind the back, Sherelle. I don't know if it's a good look. It does.
We told to look like that.
Yeah.
Of course, because this is what happens. I don't know how many photo shoots you've done, Whitey, but the photographer will tell you this is how I want you to stand, and so that's generally what you do, unless it's absolutely ridiculous. Which is this like a shoulders forcing the shoulders back and the stomach in type arrangement? I think maybe
that's what happens when you get the shoulders hands behind your back. That's what naturally happens. Your chest comes out,
correct.
Your guts goes in, and you look a little bit unusual.
They're not user-friendly shirts either, are they?
Oh, well,
they don't hide anything.
Well, when you're chiseled like I am, no real concern. But, Voss is pretty happy with his work. But you're right about the positioning. I took a step forward.
For those who haven't seen it, we'll put it on
We don't
Twitter
need to do that.
At RSN Breakfast. Have a look. We'll get Joey to put it on.
We don't need to do that.
That did look rather unnatural.
It was an unusual pose. The pose was... I must admit, I thought about it. This isn't going to work. And then you see the photo and you go, I told you it wasn't going to work.
The other interesting thing, Sherelle, and I'm not suggesting that you've done this in the past, but I found this a really interesting story, that Shefali Verma, who is one of the world's best female cricketers, she pretended to be a boy to play a full season of cricket in India just to be able to play cricket. It's sort of filtering through in recent times. What an amazing story. I mean, because she is taking the world by storm with the way she plays, but to actually play, she had to pretend she was a boy.
That is amazing. And I guess that's part of the great thing that's happening here in Australia and around the world with women in sport, females in sport, is that you don't have to do that anymore to play the sport of your choice, which, I mean, what a big step forward that might be. I hope that's the case right around the world. Who knows? Potentially there's still some countries taking some steps in that space. But well, that is amazing, isn't it? I mean, there's lots of stories. You know, Meg Lanning used to play against the boys when she was growing up. She obviously didn't have to pretend to be a boy to do that here, which was great. But what a story, and that's the result. And I think, you know, we would have missed having such an amazing, she's such an incredible cricketer. So it's awesome to have her involved, and we might have missed that if she didn't do that.
What I love about this story is that when she went home, because she was told that she can't play with the boys because she's a girl and she might get hit and hurt, and she went home devastated, and the old man said, right, let's fix this. She goes, I want to cut my hair. And he goes, I'm up for this. Let's do this. He was that keen to get her playing cricket and let her have a crack at the world that he said, I'm up for this. There'd be a lot of old school dads would be sitting there going, well, you know, they're not shaving your head and cutting your hair and being a boy. That's stupid. He's going, no, let's do this. Let's get the scissors out and go berserk and see what we can do with this mop.
Yeah, and as with most athletes, if you've got a supportive family, that gets you a big chunk of the way down the path, and probably not truer in anyone else.
Yeah, and it's not that long ago that it happened either. It's only 2 or 3 years ago that this happened. So it shows that India's women, you know, there's still so much scope for improvement because this is all relatively new to them. And you see the way they naturally play the game, particularly with the way that they bat. And you think, well, there's so much upside for what might be possible into the future.
Is she only 17?
Yeah, she's young. Oh, yeah, she's really young.
Yeah, she's young. And the reality is in India is that they don't have the same the same developmental structures, the same pathway structures that we do have here in Australia. And so, imagine when they do get that happening for their female cricketers, they'll be a real contender. I mean, they were doing the same thing against Australia just recently with not much behind them.
Mm. I didn't know she was 17.
She goes out there and 17. Just belts it.
Good luck to her.
Doesn't die wondering.
Good luck to her. Who's she play for? She plays for the Sixers.
Yeah.
They've got a little all-star cast, haven't they? The Sixers and the WBBL.
Yeah.
They've got to be short price favourites to win the whole thing. Have to be.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Unless,
I'm not sure.
I mean, the Renegades can get the job done.
Yeah, I mean, they're clearly, when you've got Healy and Perry and then you've got Verma, it's a good start.
Rock solid start.
And then you've got Ash Gardner as well. So, I mean, it's pretty good players in there. Well, they have players that play the whole season where some of them don't even bat or bowl. No, they don't. That's happened. You know, the girl that played for Hicks, Jodie Hicks, who played for the Giants.
Yeah.
She played in the Sixers, played a whole year, and I think she batted twice and doesn't bowl.
That's a lot of time in the nets. Yeah. Should be very active with makeup sessions in the nets, Sherelle. When you don't play on court, you have to do the makeup session.
Yes, that was never fun, having to do the extra sprints down the court. But, you know, some of the netballers, for example, you know, they'd be doing that as the other girls are warming down, the crowd's still in the stadium and you're sprinting up and down the court doing, you know, extras to make sure you're on the same level. Or it's not fun.
Not fun at all. What is fun, though, Sherelle, is something you've been watching on the TV. Tell us more about how you can now represent Australia.
Well, look, I think, you know, I've had a long history in netball. I've changed sports to cricket now, and this really piqued my interest. It was the Balloon World Cup. Now, the Balloon World Cup, I don't know if anyone's seen
this,
but it is a room set up. There's cars, there's couches, there's all sorts of obstacles. And basically, it's an extreme game of keepy-uppy, which keepy-uppy in my household is almost an extreme sport as it is between the kids and Breck and I. And I thought, you know what? I reckon I'd be pretty damn good at keepy-uppy on a world stage. I might give that a crack. What do you reckon, Harf?
I saw this the other day too. I think it's one of the greatest innovations in sport in my time on the planet. The balloon keepy-uppy, it's as a kid, I mean, it's one of the great things you can do. It passes the time. You dive all over the house. You maybe get a few elbows in on the way past the competitor. It became a physical, brutal contact sport, keepy-uppy, when I was a young fella with my brothers. It was madness.
Yeah, well, we had messages going in between my family, and we've got the uniform sorted. We feel like we might need helmets because we do, like, when we commit, so we've got some help. So we don't have a team name yet, so we'll be working on that, but the McMahon family, we're in. We think we could represent Australia here and do us proud.
I'm with you 100%. I think it's a great idea. What a great concept. The balloon keepy-uppy World Cup.
Why is there a car inside in what's a set-up lounge room? Yeah, aren't couches and bits of Lego on the floor and maybe a pram
Lego on the floor.
Things there that make it a bit more realistic as opposed to a car in the lounge room.
The table tennis table might have got a bit of a run.
Yeah, definitely.
But I think there's absolute merit and growth opportunities. This will be an Olympic sport before you know it. It will. Some of the rubbish they're putting up in the Olympics. This is a much better contest, I reckon. Problem is,
you'd be invested, wouldn't you? Like, because it's exciting when that balloon is floating inches off the ground and someone just sneaks their hand underneath. That's exciting. It's good stuff.
We need the listeners to give us your team name, the McMahon Balloon World Cup team, 0416905052. Give us your team name for Sherelle. The only problem with that game, like, it's a real performance of endurance, isn't it? Like, it can go a long time.
It can.
Imagine the sweat you'd get going in the World Cup of balloon upkeepy uppy. Poor, there'd be some sweat going on. And you might need, I'm not sure you need a broadcaster because they wouldn't know when to get to the commercial breaks or how long to get to before the news, or crash into the news. We'd come back and they'd still be going. Like, it'd be like the old days of the cricket. And we come back just to the interval and they come back and they're still playing. That's what would be happening with that. It'd be fantastic. I'm with you. I reckon that's one of the great little innovations. I don't know where it goes and how they get to grow that game, Sherelle, but there would be people all over the planet thinking that they are half a chance to be pretty good at that.
Absolutely. And isn't that's one of the good things about you watch people do their thing at the top level, and when you can go, I reckon I could do that. I like it. I like it when it's like that.
Now, have you got some news about what's happening in Cowra? Have you got some feedback for us?
Oh, look, the small towns, obviously very close to my heart growing up in one and spending a lot of time in regional Victoria. And Cowra in New South Wales, small country town, less than 10,000 people live there, just thought, you know what, we need something to liven up our little town. And so they sent a Facebook message, Twitter message to Chris Hemsworth. Thor. He's a bit of a local, kind of, not really, but in New South Wales at times.
Yeah.
And they went, hey, Chris, what do you reckon? You pop down to Cowra and say hi. It was a Get Chris to Cowra campaign. And Chris Hemsworth, Thor, said yes. So he's going to Cowra.
He's going to hang out in Cowra for a bit.
Well, I don't know exactly what the details might be. And the message back was like, I might be a little bit busy coming up, might be having to go to Hollywood and film a major film. But when I get back, I'll pop down to Cowra. So who knows what that will look like. But I just thought, wow, that's pretty cool. Who would you target if you wanted someone to come to your hometown?
Oh, that's a good question. That is a
to do what?
Very good. Just to hang out.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, I think you'd have to think, what are they bringing? Is it entertainment? Is it sport? Is it music? So you can, it's your own campaign, Whitey. You can make it what you want it to be.
Yeah. So do you want someone to come and just bowl rockets for your local cricket team?
You want Pat Cummins?
Yeah, or do you want someone to singing like a big concert type thing at the Oval and just turn it into a massive type, you know, Guns N' Roses at the Thunderdome back in the 90s?
For the Foo Fighters at Highfield Park.
That's right.
Campbell, that's what we need. We need the Fooies on board. That's what we need. I think that's where I'd be going, Smack. I'd be getting one of the big bands in town to float around and help a brother out. I love Chris Hemsworth as much as the next man. Like, we're very similar physiques, you know, big units, and take great photos. But you know, I'm not sure what he's going to provide me in the local community when he gets to town, apart from maybe just a little bit of hammering action.
He's got the big mallet. With his Thor mallet, yes.
He'd fix some fences on the way through.
Which of the Hemsworths was in that show, Satisfaction?
No idea.
I don't know. It's not a show that I watched closely.
I think there's three brothers.
Is
there? Liam was Miley's fiancé.
Oh, they're not the same. I thought that was Chris. Which one's the more famous?
Chris. Thor.
Chris.
Right. With the big hammer. Right. He's the one that's going to Kara.
Right.
Well, we are one for one for the early male too, just by the way. Kara, we are
That's
Kara.
Where they light fires and
thumbing tires.
Yeah.
Light tires, whatever it is. Anyway, so Chris is going to Kara. That's good news for the people of Kara. You're getting some feedback about your World Cup team name, the Keeper Upperers.
Oh, yes.
Which is a little bit boring, but that's come through. This is the one I do like, the Smackos.
Oh, yes.
Yes, that is good. You can have a sponsorship opportunity. You can wear the branded apparel as you're keeping upping across the globe there, Smack. That'd be good.
I reckon you could make a really good logo out of that name, the Smackos.
The Smack Pack or the Smack Attack?
Yes, yes. I don't know how my brother and sister would feel about it all being based around my initial, but, you know, I'm okay with that.
Let's be honest. They're fairly insignificant humans when it comes to the planet compared to you, Sherelle. John and Ollie, they know that. Deep down, they know that. They've never admitted that publicly, your parents from the beautiful Bemorm community, but they know that you are the most important person in the family.
Oh, dear. You can't say that.
You can't. My word, I can. Hey, Sherelle, a lot of feedback coming through. Yeah, the smack attack is the one that's coming through a couple of times, in fact. So I think we might have to use that as our theme.
We might lock it in. I'll put it to the family, and I'll let you know next week if it got over the line.
Can you text the Foo Fighters for me to see if they will come to Campbell? I'd appreciate that.
Sure.
Just confirmation.
It's a good choice.
Just confirmation that it's Liam Hemsworth that was in Satisfaction. Just for those that are interested, I've got some correspondence coming through.
Right.
So I'm very surprised Craig didn't know about Satisfaction.
What is Satisfaction?
It's a TV show. It's like a series on Foxtel.
Right, and why do you watch it?
It's just an interesting story. Good storyline. It's an Australian series from back probably 10 years ago. I'll show you in the ad break.
What's it about?
No, it's just about life in general. Unusual life.
Sounds a bit fishy to me. Sounds a bit fishy.
Well, Liam Hemsworth was in it.
Well, no, I believe that part. I don't believe anything else you've said. Geelong Cup Day, and we like regional cups, even though this is one of the bigger ones. And Dave Eustace, I'm sure, just likes winning. Full stop, doesn't matter where. He joins us as part of the Mayo Eustace training combination. Good morning, Dave.
Morning, guys. How are you?
We are very well. Thank you, buddy. Nice to have you with us. It is. What about cup days and the regional cups? Are they big for the stable?
Yeah, they are, absolutely. Geelong Cup Day. Actually, the first race day I ever went to in Australia was a bit of an eye-opener. Yeah, it was a fairly strong welcome to Australia, that. it lived long in the memory, and we've had chances in the race and got a couple of nice chances in it, but it's a big day.
What year was that, Dave, that first Geelong Cup?
2014, was it? The Caravans rolled on, win it, I think.
Yeah.
I think that was it. That was my first year shooting to win one beginning.
And who was entertaining you on that afternoon, Dave?
Well, I brought some. The biggest eye opener was the mayor with the colourful hair and the. I don't know whether he's still going or not.
But, Darren Lyons.
Yeah, colourful hair and always had a couple of good looking birds either side. I thought he was the guy to try and latch onto.
Didn't he own one of the nightclubs as well down there?
He was a paparazzi photographer.
Not sure. Didn't get that far. So if I go out in Geelong, I might never be found again.
Oh, goodness me. That's a great story to open the batting today. Well played by you. It's been a big, big week. It's been a big year. You guys are busy every day of the year. But build up to the Cox Plate, of course, we're all very excited about. But today you do have a couple of runners in the Geelong Cup, Dr. Drill and Bartholomew Diaz, who we know very well as fans of racing. Are you confident you can get in the money today?
Yeah, I think, confident of being in the money. Got a lot of respect for the favourite, Charlie Rose. I think she's a really good mare, and which, you know, doesn't take a lot of working out, but, you know, she is still definitely progressive. I think, you know, Simon's handled her extremely well, and he's really looked after her, and she's very unlucky not to have won this prep. So, you know, she's going to love the track, and undoubtedly is the one to beat, but our two geldings are both racing in terrific form. Bartholomew Diaz, all three of his runs have been very good. Dr. Drill, you know, he's ever consistent when he gets the right conditions. We're trying 2400 again. There's probably a little bit of a doubt whether he sees that out, but to be fair, he's only beaten poor a length and a half at Flemington and was still finding the line, so... you know, these races are worth an awful lot of money, and they start thinning out a bit this time of year leading into the Cup, so we thought it was the right race to have a go.
So, Dave, with these horses, is today sort of the day, or are you still sort of looking ahead with potential other big races, distance races in the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, I think, you know, with these two, really, it's a day to... you know, hopefully run extremely well and pick up some prize money. They're not really cup hopes. We're just trying to place them correctly to win good prize money, which there is a lot on offer for. Bartholomew Diaz, you know, depending on whether he rounds, it really it's whether either of them round out the mile and a half well or whether we have to go back in trick. But obviously, there's a couple in the race that will be looking to work towards the cup, and I'd say these horses probably aren't.
In the Mercado on Friday night, you've got a few runners there happening as well. It's a night race. How does that change things for you, or does it? Do the horses care whether they're running it day or night?
Yeah, not really. If you have a first start to run badly under lights of the valley, that's definitely your excuse for the owners. But not really. I don't think night racing affects them too much. We might do a little bit more with them in the morning so that they're not as fresh. You know, most of our horses will be on the walker or just do something very light on the tread morning of the race, but they might be ridden that morning just so that they're not too fresh. But other than that, the preparation is pretty much the same, and they seem to perform very well whatever time of day it is, really.
Well, and you do have a few runners there. Crystal Bound's kind of going okay. Had a really good win on debut at the Valley. What's your best there? How are you feeling?
Yeah, honestly, it's the easy thing to say, but there wouldn't be a lot between all four of them, and it will come down to who gets the right run. The race itself, Bella and Crystal Bound, Bella Nepotina, who's racing extremely well. I think she's probably our best chance, but you can't discount any of them. You know, the 2-3-0 fillies, they're running because they're racing extremely well, but they're also carrying 51, and that's what Loving Gabby was able to do 2 years ago, and it's a similar train of thought. So they're all in good form, and even away game, she threw in a bad run the other day, which was very unusual for her. She's never done it before. And we can't tell you why she did either, but if she's back to her best, then she'll be right in the mix. So it's a fascinating race. Everyone's knocking the fact that it's not a stellar Manicato, but what it is a very even race, and it'll be a very exciting finish, I'm sure.
Andy Harper is part of the Channel 10 commentary team, the football analyst in the Channel 10 commentary team. for the World Game, and we love it. He's one of our favourites around these parts too, and he's been good enough to join us ahead of the Matildas clash with Brazil on Saturday night to kick off their two-match friendly series. Andy, good morning.
Yeah, good day. How are you?
We are well, mate. How are you?
Yeah, good, good. And thinking of you guys and down there south of the border and hoping things open up, you know, measured and quickly so people can get some smiles back on their face.
That would be nice, and we appreciate your sentiments. Thank you very much for that. What gives us smiles on our faces, good performances by our national teams. The Matildas in action on home soil for the first time in about 2 years, isn't it, in this series against Brazil?
Long time, mate, 600-odd days. COVID's obviously had a big say on that, but a lot of their games have been away anyway, World Cups and then the Olympics. So first time we get to see or welcome the new, well, he's not new now, he's been in the seat for 12 games, the Swedish coach, Tony Gustafsson. He hasn't been to the country yet. and so he'll be greeting, introducing himself to the media in person, done all the stuff by Zoom, of course. But it's great to have the team back. You know, they're a very popular team, the Matildas, and we're looking forward to seeing them in the flesh starting on Saturday.
Do you think they have a bit to prove on the back of the performance at the Olympics? Do you think they were disappointed at the Olympics, or was it about the mark?
No, I think they're subpar at the moment. One of the things, if I get a chance to speak with the Swedish coach, Tony Gustafsson of Australia, I would like to try and understand where he's plotting things, because he's a very talented team with one of the best players in the world in Sam Kerr and one of the most noted up-and-coming players in the world in Ellie Carpenter and a lot of experience besides. I think they've tacked neutral, to say, at best, yeah, really, under him. And it's been frustrating to watch. It could just be growing pains, what sometimes happens with a new coach. But, you know, there's going to be increasing scrutiny on this team. Of course, this is all leading up to the Asian Cup, Women's Asian Cup next year. But the big focus for all of us in support of the Matildas is the 2023 World Cup. And they have got a lot of ground to cover before, you know, they can look themselves in the mirror and say, you know, we can have a serious crack at this.
You say about growing pains, Andy. Has there been a significant shift that you've seen in the way they play that would kind of attest to that kind of shift in what they're trying to do under this new coach?
Yeah, sure. What a great question. And I think most certainly. Now, every coach is... It's their prerogative to have the team play they want to play, the way they want to play, and I completely accept that. What's been very clear with this team is that his style seems to me to be a complete, almost a 180-degree turnaround from the way in which the team was progressing. Most recently, the two coaches, Alan Stajic, had set the team up in the Ange Postecoglou era, and anyone who's listening who follows the football at all and understands at all what Ange is about and the impact he had on the game would understand that that was a high-intensity, very progressive, possession-based game, controlling the game through possession and relentless pressure. Stajic, he wasn't a clone of Ange's, but he was part of that atmosphere. And then, obviously, highly controversial period in the game when he was removed from the job. Ante Milicic comes in for the last World Cup. He was a former assistant of Ange Postecoglou at the Brazil World Cup, etc., etc. So he had his views, all with slight nuances, but very similar, possession-based, dominate your opponents. And then Gustafsson comes in, and he's thrown that, it seems to me, he's thrown that book out the window. Now, it's his prerogative to do that. He then is judged on the results, which haven't been forthcoming. But with now Gustafsson in charge, it's a very, very... In football terms, you call it a very direct approach. It's you get the ball to the centre halves, and they more often than not bypass the midfield and knock the ball long into what they perceive to be vacant spaces in the other team's defence. This, in a very basic sense, seems to be the strategy: get the ball to Sam Kerr as quick as we can. Now, that theory sounds great. The practice hasn't worked, and the midfield has been underdone. And I don't think he's brought enough freshness and youth into the midfield, to be frank. Let's see if he starts tinkering with that in these Brazil games.
Yeah, that's great insight too, to hear about how that has shifted. And obviously another one of the big stories in recent times has been the allegations that Lisa Devanna has brought forward about the alleged abuse that she had experienced within that Matilda setup. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are around, I mean, that has come out reasonably recently, but the impact that sort of thing potentially has on the on-field performance of this group.
Yeah, well, to the second first, Sherelle, a large part of the viewing public will have that question hanging. You know, how are the girls who've been thrust into this discussion through no choice of their own, which is not to say, you know, certainly not to run Lisa out of town with what she said. I mean, her comments, her allegations, the complaints she's raised need to be front and centre, and they need to be dealt with seriously and compassionately, and we need to work a way through this. But it's a firestorm, there's no question. In fact, Sherelle, I just cannot think of another national team that has had to front up for an international match amid such heat.
Yeah.
Now, we've had our cricket teams with ball tampering and all that sort of, you know, stuff, but this is next level. This sort of innuendo is next level. And there are these young athletes, some of whom are very young, having to sort of have this in their mind, knowing that people are thinking various things. It'll be very, very difficult for the players, extraordinarily difficult. So difficult, in fact, and so and such a first that I can think. I mean, I'm happy to stand corrected. We just don't know what to expect, and I'm trusting the authorities that they've got two prongs in the short term to their approach to this. Firstly, is to provide a process and a safe and welcoming and comfortable process for people to come forward and share what they feel like they need to share, and secondly, to provide the same sort of cotton wool around the girls who are find themselves part of this, but have nothing to answer for. You know, there's a lot of innocent people who are, because of the way this has come out so far, there's a lot of innocent reputations which are in the dock at the moment, and people have things for which they need to be held accountable. Then they need to set up a process where that can be achieved. But in the short term, for these players, as much as their focus is going to want to be on doing really well on the field, what a challenge for them to actually achieve that.
Speaking of big pipes, Mark Steckity's got massive pipes, and he put them to good use in Queensland's recent game in the Sheffield Shield against South Australia. 10-for, if you don't mind, through the match. Career best figures for him, and he's been good enough to join us on the line this morning. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, guys. I'm not too sure about the big pipes, but it's nice to see you.
How much time are you sitting in the strong room these days and just trying to just beef up a touch?
Yeah, I had a pretty big off season in the gym, but yeah, it didn't look like it helped too much. Especially up top, I try and keep the weight off up top. That's when you run into trouble with cricket, unfortunately.
No, fair enough. Well, whatever you're doing pretty well, because it was a big performance in the game last week against South Australia at the Adelaide Oval. 10-for for the match, which is career best figures. You must be very, very pleased that that's the result of an early season performance.
Yeah, pretty happy with the performance. It was a lovely wicket to bowl on as well. A little bit in it for the bowls, which is always a nice sign. Not just the batter's game, which is good to see.
A big contrast to Karen Rolton Oval seemingly at the moment too. So it might have been nice to get on a wicket that gave you a little bit of support.
Yeah, that first game was pretty testing at Karen Rolton Oval to try and get some wickets. No one's quite figured that out yet, but yeah, nice to get on a good cricket wicket and take some wickets.
And now, Mark, at what point are you going to be able to bowl in your own playing shirt and sort of have your own stuff? Because you started bowling in Sam Haslett's shirt in the last game against Tasmania, and you still didn't have your name on your back for the second game.
Yeah, I know. My tip bag got stolen, which is a pretty funny story. But yeah, I borrowed Haslett's shirt, and now I'm in no name shirt. I might have to keep it though. It might be a lucky charm.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Where'd your bag get stolen?
The tip bag there. And the second night we were down there, someone decided that they needed two tip bags, myself and Jimmy Pearson's got done, so it must have been a wicketkeeper and a bowler.
Jeez, you're a bit stiff.
very stiff.
Yeah, so take us through what you've done. I mean, you said before you spent a fair bit of time in the gym. I must confess, I'm going to put it out here, I'm a big fan of Mark. I reckon he's one of the best bowlers coming through, because you're an aggressive, old-fashioned, fast bowler. And there's not necessarily many. So it's like you and Jimmy Pattinson are the two that stand out in that category.
Yeah, I try and compete. That's all it really is. I love watching Jimmy Pattinson bowl as well. But he's not fun to face, let me tell you. He gets in your face and he's quite intimidating. So if I'm half as intimidating as that, I'm doing nothing not done right.
Yeah, absolutely. But, I mean, is it a particular role that you really focus on? Because obviously Queensland, you're the defending Shield champions. You're a really good team with a lot of depth. And you've got so many big, strong, fast bowlers in your artillery that, and not all of them can play at any one time.
Yeah, that's right. We obviously have a couple of guys with injuries at the moment. So it's my role to sort of bring that little bit extra, I guess. We have guys that are really skillful, like Michael Meeser and Jack Wilderness, who are really skillful with the ball, but we're missing Big Billy Stanlake, who can bowl a lot faster than what I can, so I try and bring what he could bring to the side and then put my own mix on it as well.
We are keeping an eye on what's building for the summer of cricket. We know Tony Dottermade was a world-class player. We know he's a world-class administrator. By God, we hope he's a world-class test selector and national selector for Australia, because that's the job he's got at the moment. He joins us on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Tony.
Good morning, all. Thanks for having me on.
Good on you. Great to have you with us. Congratulations on the appointment as the national selector for the Australian cricket team. Is it something that you ever thought you would find yourself doing?
Oh, no, look, really, I didn't at all. It was really a case of, out the blue, I hadn't given it much consideration for the last couple of years. Since stepping away from Cricket Vic, who's now, of course, recruited much better talent than I, with Sherelle there. but no, after having a bit of a break away, I was just picked up a project and I've been working with Hockey Australia, which has been really good. I knew that Trevor had stepped down and wasn't renewing the contract, but didn't give it much thought, and I was just made aware of the recruitment that was coming up, and had a bit of a look at the PD, and the more I thought about it, the more I thought that, I might have some good experience and skills that might be able to fit this brief. So with no expectation at all, I put my hat in the ring, and as we went further in the process, got more and more excited about it. So really nice to be in at the heart of Australian cricket and can't wait to start.
So, Tony, what did you do so well in that application process? Because I applied for the job as well, and I didn't get through to the next stage. So what can I do differently next time? Probably play for Australia like you?
I believe there's about 11,437,000 applications for the role. But, we're all, and that's one of the great things about our sport and this team, that there is so much passion and so much interest in the team and in the selection in particular. Everyone, it's a summer sport, isn't it? Standing around and speculating who might be in and out. So it's a great that's great for the sport. It's also a great responsibility. Hopefully I've got some skills and certainly remember the playing days really well and how hard it was being a player and with the ups and downs of form and all the rest of it. So it's very much an imperfect science, but can't wait to get involved and see if I can help George and JL and the rest of the team at Cricket Australia.
Well, I was just going to mention George and Justin Langer. So George Bailey and Justin Langer, the other selectors, who, of course, you'll be jumping in with. George Bailey, I think you would have spent some time with at his time at the Stars, but what do you think that is going to be like, jumping in and pretty quickly having to build up a good working relationship with them?
Thanks, Sherelle. Yeah, look, I'm really confident. I did get to meet George a bit in his time at the Stars, and also with being captain of Tasmania, I always made a point when I was CEO there of doing the post-match reports during Shield games, etc., just so I was in touch with what was happening with the players and in the dressing room. So George struck me then as a really personable guy, very astute, obviously with his own experience. And Justin, I've known for some time. I was actually, our paths have crossed a number of times over the journey. Our playing careers intersected a bit, and I was actually 12th man for Australia in that first test, the famous test in Adelaide Oval against the West Indies when he made his debut. So paths have crossed and I know him reasonably well and, love his passion. So I'm really confident that we'll be able to get a good chemistry going first up and have those good, robust conversations, challenge each other, et cetera, but hopefully pull it all together and make some good decisions.
Well, make some good decisions, but some difficult decisions, no doubt, always in that position. And it's probably not helped by the fact that the New South Wales and Victorian sides aren't going to be playing much. It sounds like we've got some games locked in New South Wales and Victoria, but how much of an impact does that have, do you think, on your decision-making without them really being able to be playing as much before the Ashes as they would normally be?
Yes, it is the challenge, Sherelle, isn't it? I mean, all sports have been mucked around. There's somewhat scheduling difficulties and certainly not ideal. What you'd love to have is that initial schedule where everyone was pretty much playing four or five games each before the first test. So that's unlikely to happen now. I do believe, though, that we're very, very close, if not confirmed now, of having a series of games, two or three games of Victoria and New South Wales playing. So it'd be great for those players to get some, get a chance to get some runs and wickets on the board. It's great to see in the other games, actually, that players now are putting their hand up. And I certainly remember my days whenever there was an Ashes tour on the horizon, it just went up a step in terms of steel cricket. Everyone really wanted to put their credentials forward, and it's great to see that happening around the country now.
That was the best of The Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.